This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by the KTTH smartphone app. Text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770. We'll send you a link so you can stream the station anywhere you go. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
Four school districts across the country, including one right here in Washington State, is suing Juul, the e-cigarette company. The preeminent one. The local school district that's getting involved in this lawsuit is the LeConner School District, located in Skagit County. In an interview with the superintendent, Whitney Meisner, who's going to be on the show in a little bit more than an hour, she claims that kids are directly being targeted by Juul. I am sick and tired of that really, really bad argument. It's an inconsistent argument. Now, if folks who took this position, which is basically, hey, Juul, which is a e-cigarette maker, they vaporize. So you've got little cartridges of nicotine fluid, some of which is flavored. They say, hey, if you put out the flavors that kids like, fruity flavors, flavors like cinnamon toast crunch, similar to the cereal, like all that kind of stuff, things that kids like, you're essentially specifically targeting adults. That seems a little bizarre to me on its surface because adults also like these flavors, right? When you look at how Juul operates, their number one and number two flavors mix between mint and mango. And they're selling it to adults. But okay, if that's your argument, that that's your exclusive argument, that you don't have some kind of, you know, whistleblowing document or whistleblower coming forward saying, actually, here, check this out. They specifically say, this is how we're going to go after kids. If that's going to be your argument, you got to be consistent. And there is no consistency whatsoever. The health board in Washington State today is voting in favor of banning these flavored e-cartridges, okay? Because of this reason. And Inslee himself said they're specifically trying to target 12-year-olds to get them addicted because of this. Okay, why are you not calling on a ban for flavored vodka? Why are you not going after the vodka makers that is flavored cotton candy, birthday cake, which, by the way, is gross, berry, lemon, all of those? Why aren't you having those same calls? By the way, why are you not going after hard cider? Because I've had some cider, hard cider, that tastes sweeter than apple juice. Is that not the same argument? Why are you stepping away from that? There is no consistency there. You'll hear every once in a while, it's like, well, yeah, you know what? If they're going after the kids as well, we should stop that too. We don't want people drinking. Okay, well, then why aren't you suing? Why aren't you going after vodka makers or cider brewers or breweries and whatnot? Why are you not going after them? Oh, well, you know what? It's a little bit different argument, right? I mean, more people are smoking than drinking in high school. Really? That's your position? Because that doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem like it's backed by data. But let's say it is. Let's say there are more people who are vaporizing. And the data, by the way, is very questionable because they count in these questions. This is how they pose it to high school students. Have you smoked at least one time in the last 30 days? If you say yes, you are counted as a smoker. Okay, but understand that if I took one puff of an e-cigarette because I was curious what it was like, I would be counted the exact same way as a kid who's smoking four packs a day. That seems questionable to me. That seems disingenuous to me. And yet that's the data that we're using to pretend that there's this mountain of evidence to show you that kids are vaping with impunity. You need to be consistent. Unfortunately, what we have here is an overreaction with little data to back up their concerns. Certainly from an individual school district level, because I'm not aware of any kid who's getting sick in the LeConner School District here in Washington. And by the way, do not let people claim that Juul devices are responsible for some of the sicknesses and deaths that we've seen. Because the news stories, at least that I've seen, and the preliminary information that's been put out there so far has indicated that these aren't Juul devices. These are black market devices. Black market devices or cartridges that have been changed, abused in some kind, tampered with, that's causing these issues. That seems like a much different story, yeah? 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution hotline. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in King County?
In the course of 4 days, three people were shot. Two of them were teenagers. One of them was an adult who was killed. And it all happened in Federal Way. We've been all over this story this week because it's incredibly important. It's important because it seems very clear what's going on in Federal Way, but it doesn't feel like we're having an honest conversation about it, at least not yet. We now know that the victim of the last shooting, it happened Sunday morning at a gas station. The victim has been identified as Moises Vega Mendez. He was shot in the head. And he had some kind of dispute with someone that we don't believe he actually knew. And a lot of people who live in Federal Way, even though this is one murder in 2019, there are some significant crime concerns there. And so their police chief, Andy Wang, spoke with Cairo 7 to address some of these concerns.
It is unusual for us. It is concerning. The police department alone can't keep a community safe. I think gun violence does create a lot of fear, and rightfully so.
Now, he made an important point there. The police department alone can't fix this. And that's not him saying, well, us here in Federal Way, we can't figure it out. That's not what he's saying. Because the same is true of Seattle and Everett and Tacoma and Olympia and Bellevue. Individual police departments can only do so much, especially when we know or at least suspect that this is an issue with gang violence. It seems obvious, at least in most of these cases, maybe not all yet, but in most of them, this is crime being driven by gangs or gang members. Federal Way has a history of gang violence, of gang warfare. And it's not all happening in Federal Way by people who live in Federal Way, right? I mean, when you look at some of the surrounding areas, whether we're talking about Burien or Des Moines or Kent and Auburn, clearly there are some problems in that general area. There are gang problems in Seattle and Bellevue and Everett. So it's not a Federal Way issue, but it does seem obvious to me that we should probably be calling it for what it is. And yet, for some reason, when the mayor was on, Jim Farrell, he says it's not gang violence, but listen to the way he talked about it.
There's no formalized gang structure. Our understanding is that the
By the way, I don't know what this means.
There's no formalized gang structure.
Does that mean they don't have a quorum when they get together? They don't have someone who's a secretary writing down their notes and publishing the minutes? That I don't understand, but let's let him finish.
Our understanding is that the individual at the Wild Waves incident was, you know, throwing some gang signs. He was walking through the parking lot, and he did something that was...
Did he just say, sorry, I wasn't paying attention. He said gang signs?
Yeah.
Okay. I lost my attention span for a moment. One more quick thing.
You know, throwing some gang signs.
Okay. Then we did hear it. I just want to make sure, because every once in a while, you know, I'm getting tweets and texts and everything. Sometimes I miss things.
But it's not organized gang violence, right?
Oh, okay. Wait, let him finish.
He was walking through the parking lot, okay. And he did something that was...
What did
demonstrably
he do?
Sort of, you know, did some signs.
Okay, gang
that
signs.
Was enough, apparently, for the individuals in the car to produce a handgun and shoot him.
But it's not organizing. Okay.
Now, that individual lived, but, you know, that's certainly, you know, while somebody
gang
maybe
violence?
Make a gang sign,
yeah.
I don't think that that's necessarily, you know, I don't know what, we don't know who's in that other car.
I get him wanting to be certain that whomever was involved was connected with the gang, but it kind of feels like we're talking around an issue. And when you're talking around the issue, you're not going to address what the Federal Way police chief just said, which is he can't do it alone. His department can't do it alone. And when we're talking about gang violence, there are reasons why kids become gang members. And if you don't go after that problem by identifying it, how are you going to come up with any solutions? And it's very funny because this echoes a segment we did 2 weeks ago having to do with gang violence in Tacoma. And it was an interview where the Tacoma PD spokesperson, Loretta Kuhl, spoke with the Tacoma News Tribune, and they were looking at the data because they've seen a lot of gun violence there. And a lot of folks in the community are like, this is clearly gang violence. But she says, whoa, 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 whoa. That's not the case at all.
People who are identified as gang members are some of the people who are committing crimes, but the crimes are more interpersonal relationship related or just that individual that's committing a crime.
So it's not gang violence because, yes, they're gang members, but they're not shooting at each other while officially engaged. They didn't go into their gang headquarters and clock in and officially say they're on the clock as a gang member. Okay. This is maddening. This is absolutely maddening how we talk about this problem. Who is more likely to... to use violence to settle an interpersonal issue. The gang member who's armed, or the accountant who's your neighbor. Now, I'll let a few of you at home just take 5 seconds to think about that. Who's more likely to engage in criminal violent behavior? The gangbanger who's got a gun on him, or her, or your neighbor, the accountant? I mean, Stu is kind of a loser and loose cannon on top of that. But no, okay, gang member. They're more inclined to commit these types of criminal violent acts. Yeah. So let's stop pretending that they're not gang members. And let's actually call it what it is. These are violent, dangerous gangbangers who we need to go after. And sometimes that means simply arresting because they've committed a dangerous criminal act, or intervention to make sure that kids who don't maybe have a secure family structure or adults in their lives who are looking out for their best interests, let's connect them with some resources. Unless you're going to do that, you're going to keep having some of these issues. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Don't forget, you can follow me on Instagram. Just fire up that Instagram app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. Give me a follow, and I'll take you behind the scenes of the show and show you some goofy photos of producer Peyton's brand new blue light glasses. They look like what they sound.
Protecting my eyes, okay? Don't want to get fried out here. Like you.
You know what they're not protecting?
What's that?
Your pride.
I don't have any anymore. I work for you.
That's true. I make sure we break everybody down. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
Later this afternoon in Seattle, the Seattle Police Officers Guild, SPOG, is hosting a Seattle Council candidate forum to get a better idea of how the candidates and incumbents will treat issues important to police officers and policing in general. Joining me to preview this discussion is Rich O'Neill. He is SPOG's Director of Media Relations. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Let's be with you.
So what can we expect from the forum? What exactly is the focus going to be? Because obviously when it comes to policing, that can mean a whole lot of things.
Right. Well, there's one topic and one topic only, and that is public safety. We believe it is the single most important critical issue facing Seattle right now. I believe we're at kind of a crossroads. And, you know, the direction of the city will be definitely steered with this election. And we hope that the Seattle voters will be tuned in to listen to these candidates, you know, opinions on public safety, because it's going to steer where we go. But we need some real change.
How much of this was decided just because of police concern or interest versus the concern and interest of people who live in Seattle?
Well, I think it is, you know, you pretty much have to be, you know, living under a rock to not know that, you know, see everything in the media about public safety and about how people are complaining about mm-hmm. the conditions of the once beautiful city that we live in. And, you know, that was what caused us to say, hey, look, why don't we, and this is the first time we've ever done this, why don't we have a forum to where there's only one topic and we invite all the candidates and have them come out and tell us what their plans are for public safety. You know, and public safety is kind of a wide umbrella. I mean, we're going to be talking about crime. We're going to be talking about the repeat offenders. We're going to be talking about, you know, police contract, which is in the news and, you know, which got a lot of attention. And what city council people who would be voting on a police contract, what they think should be in there and shouldn't, and so on.
Has everyone agreed to participate, all the candidates?
We invited all of the candidates, every single one of them, and we have had RSVPs from, I believe, at this point, all but four. So,
who are the four?
10 of the candidates. You're going to put me on the spot. I knew Council Person Sawant decided not to come.
Shocking.
Peterson, Morales, and just very recently, Council Member Juarez.
What do you make of that?
Well, you know, they all had different reasons for it. Some expressed they didn't like our format, which it's a limited seating venue, so we can't just open it up to the public. So we invited, there's going to be some community groups, some business groups, but we really wanted to have a lot of police officers come, retired and active, because they, I think, would generate the real questions about crime and public safety and what works mm-hmm. and what doesn't work. So that was a discussion we were trying to have. So that was the reason we had a limited invitation-only event. Now, some have expressed they didn't like that. I think it's unfortunate because, you know, I just think that you should be able to go to any event, and we plan on treating everyone with the utmost respect and the utmost courtesy. And, you know, it's just unfortunate those that chose not to come to again, we think it's the most critical issue, and they chose not to come. You know, they're making their decision. But, you know, we have 10 of 14, and we're going to focus on them.
So when you look at a decision like one from Shama Sawant, and I think SPOG and the police officers in general have not been very pleased with Councilmember Sawant, and that's putting it lightly, do you understand that maybe in her case why she wouldn't want to show up to an event in which she's not able to bring a whole bunch of her supporters?
Well, I guess I can understand. I try to understand everybody's, you know, the other side of every story, but she's not been receptive to us at all. I mean, the union president has tried repeatedly mm-hmm. to even have a private meeting with her, and she's just never interested, doesn't want to hear it. So, you know, her absence is not unexpected.
Yeah, it's not shocking.
You know, I would think that, you know, that... every candidate would want to come and talk about public safety and hear from community groups and business leaders that are going to be there. Firefighters are going to be there, you know, and just hear from them some of their concerns. You know, and we have a professional moderator who's going to be, you know, controlling the event. So we're really looking forward to it. And again, we're going to focus on the 10 of the 14 that are giving of their time and are going to come. We're going to be filming it, and we will, you know, have it up on social media as soon as the film is ready.
Yeah, and not only can people follow the Seattle Police Officers Guild on Facebook or Twitter, once the video goes up, we not only will be posting it on our own pages as well, but we'll have a nice breakdown tomorrow. How soon before you guys come out with endorsements?
We've called a special meeting next, I believe it is Tuesday, to discuss the forum and to discuss endorsements, possible endorsements. You know, there are some races we'll choose to endorse. There might be some races mm-hmm. where we just choose to not endorse anybody. But, you know, again, we just want to focus on the fact that this is a critical crossroads election, because so many of the issues that are out there, but there's none more important than public safety, and we just need council you know, members that are going to focus on that and are not going to ignore are not going to just try the things they've done over and over again that obviously whatever you're doing isn't working. So we're really interested in hearing some new ideas and to have folks that want to truly listen and work on the problem, because if people don't feel safe in their community, if they don't feel safe downtown, it just has a snowball's effect. Mm-hmm. It affects businesses. It affects people's livelihoods in business. And it affects the police department, morale. I mean, there's so many issues that go along with it. You know, and that's why we've invited our firefighters, because, you know, in conversations I've had with Kenny Stewart, the president of their union, you know, they are facing for some of the first times in Seattle, you know, just an increase in violence on firefighters when they're having to go into a lot of these encampments and a lot of these on these calls that they go in. And, you know, they're being assaulted and they're having to, you know, almost have a security force around them while they go in. And it's like, what is going on? You know, that shouldn't be happening in our city. And, you know, it's not any one person's fault. It's not any one council person's fault. But if we can just change the mindset on the council, that is our hope.
Well, that's our hope as well, as supporters of police in not just Seattle, but all across Washington and the country. We see what's happening in so many of our communities, and it is completely unacceptable. I'm glad that the Seattle Police Officers Guild is having this particular forum. I wish it was a little bit later in the evening so I can attend, but we will be watching the video once it's posted. Again, we'll have it up on our Facebook page at facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. We've been talking with Rich O'Neill. He is the Director of Media Relations for SPOG, the Police Officers Union. Thank you so much for coming on. As always, really, really appreciate it.
Sure thing, Jason.
Absolutely. You are listening to The Jason Rantz Show.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is The Big Local on The Jason Rantz Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Yo. Hey, everybody, look what time it is. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. Doesn't that mean it's time for The Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller, Smiles by Design? The concept, very simple. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. They end up ignoring a lot of important stories that happen in your neighborhood. So we ignore Seattle, and we focus our time on you. And we start this afternoon in Tukwila. We've got an update to a story that was kind of a significant one. 26 poles, power poles, collapsed back in April. It was a windy day. They collapsed. They fell on some cars. In fact, one of them fell on a car as it was driving by. A passenger and a driver narrowly escaped serious damage that could have been done by these poles. And now we know why, according to a report, why they came down. They were weakened thanks to decay. You have strong winds on top of decay, and this was what happens. Tom Cook was the driver of the van that got hit by one of those poles. He's pretty lucky to be alive.
If it had hit the windshield or the sunroof, the power lines would have come inside the car. If it had been off-center to one side or the other, it would have collapsed the roof on top of one of them.
Now, according to this report that's been released, three of the poles that collapsed also were found to be damaged by an infestation of beetles. Como TV reports, the report found that the utility poles that initially failed had been inspected 3 years earlier and were rated P2, meaning their strength was degraded. One of the two poles that failed had only 33% of its original strength at the time of inspection, while the other had only 57% of its original strength, according to the report. Under Seattle City Light's criteria, the P2 rating meant that poles would need required maintenance within a practical time frame. But the report concludes that a specification like that, quote, is completely vague and provides no level of urgency for remediation. This is frightening to me because I don't count on government agencies for too much, right? But there are certain things that they're the ones who are supposed to take care of us in this case, making sure that our poles aren't degraded to the fact that a simple gust of wind might knock it down. When you've got a pole that only has, what was it, 33% of its original strength, why are you not attacking that problem immediately? This is your job. You don't have that many jobs over at the City Light Department, right? There's not that many things. You're focused on giving us energy and making sure the infrastructure that provides to us energy literally doesn't fall down. This is incompetence. This is totally incompetent. Now, of course, the question becomes, I mean, is this going to happen more often? Tacoma Public Utilities' John Nierenberg spoke with Como TV and said, okay, we can't speak for what happened in Tukwila, but we can say that these events are pretty rare.
Cascading events are very rare. We have an inspector that goes out. They actually physically drill the pole to make sure that we know the amount of remaining strength of the pole. They do an assessment of the whole pole. When we do our testing, we're trying to dig down below the ground line. Uh-huh. It's very damp here. So we end up with ground line rot. And that's the kind of thing that we typically look for. If you notice branches or other things that could be threatening our power system, let us know. Give us a call.
So now it's on us? Okay. Write that note down. Just another sort of thing to add to your to-do list. Check the poles around your apartment, your home, our office, and then we'll have to do the job now.
So there's like three outside of your office window, and I'm not going to check those.
Okay, you'd be doing me a favor by not checking those.
I'm doing us both a favor.
There was a crazy crash in Buckley that almost killed a woman who was in her home when this pickup truck, a Sierra, slammed through two fences in her yard and crashed right into her home. She spoke with Como TV. Her name is Betty Albert.
Have you ever seen a mess like this before in your whole life?
Where were
I was sitting right inside there watching television. You don't think I was scared to death. Sounded like a bomb dropped in there with all that stuff coming down.
She was about to, she was a little salty. When I first saw this story, I do have to say, I've had weird fears about this. Not necessarily like a car going through my apartment because I'm on a higher floor in my building, but just the whole idea of just random accidents happening and you can't really prepare. What was she supposed to do? Nothing, right? She just got lucky. And it is one of those instances that I'm assuming her life is shaken a little bit, right? Her sense of comfort is shaken, not, you know, having to experience this and not really being able to prepare for it. She just happened to be in the right place at the right time. But it got me thinking about all the crazy things that happen just like this. Like, it's just completely random. I could get hit by a bus on the, knock on wood, it doesn't happen. Or, again, depending on my mood, maybe it should have. Like, it could just happen to anybody. So you're just wandering around. Let's say you're on a scooter, an e-scooter in Redmond. And just, bam, you get hit by a bus.
Now, I know you're not a fan of good movies. And by that, I mean comedy movies that are just, you know, gut-wrenching.
That's not true.
But does this not just remind you of Ricky Bobby when he's learning to drive with the blindfold on and he puts the Chevelle into the corner of the house and he says, oh, you better tail out of here,
maybe
Frank.
Maybe that's what happened, because according to the report, they say Albert lives along the Sumner-Buckley Highway. She figures the truck came around the corner and crashed through one fence, then crossed 100 yards of pasture land and crashed through another fence right into the house. That's like going a long distance, right?
They showed
that's committed
in the news story. They show the farm that the truck drove through.
It is so insane. And at one point, they thought the woman and her son John thought that the truck was the only thing keeping the house from collapsing on itself. So they had to bring in one of their tractors to give some support to the ceiling so the whole house wouldn't collapse. Now here's the interesting thing: the driver fled. But they do believe that the owner of the car, the one who's registered, was in fact the driver. They don't give his name, but they say the Pierce County Sheriff's Office believes the driver was the registered owner of the truck. The owner reportedly has several arrest warrants for other matters. Cell phones, a school district laptop, a small gun safe, and other items were found inside the truck. A school district laptop. I'm wondering if it's a school board member, like someone who was in the who works for the school and maybe was on duty and this happened and they fled. Think, if you're going to flee, bad guys, don't write this down. Ignore this advice. If you're going to flee the scene of a crime, is it smart to leave all the evidence that's directly connected to you?
Yeah, that's rough. First thing I thought about, though, in that area is the Ording school district guy from last week who got caught using the company credit card. One,
no, it's not him. I think he moved out of the state.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
darn.
It's not him. Don't just put that out there.
I was just trying
to sue you.
I was being a super sleuth, just trying to piece some things together.
Peyton, you see, here's the deal. You're new on the show, so you don't realize this. People call me Detective Rance.
Oh, do they? Who calls you that?
People call me that.
Name one people that calls you that.
Well, that's incorrect grammar. You mean
I know it is, but that's how certain I am that you don't have anyone who calls you this.
John does.
Who's John?
Wait, you want his social security number?
I'd like a last name at minimum.
Coquet.
What you drinking over there?
A diet beverage.
Sounds I bet you it's a Diet Coke, huh?
Yeah, it's a Diet Coke.
Does it say share with John on the side? You know how they have the share with name labels? Probably says John on the other side of that bottle.
No.
A little funny how you just move the Coke to the other side of the desk to kind of get it out of your vision, out of sight, out of mind.
Coincidence?
I think not.
Okay.
Can't wait to meet John, though, and all your other friends.
You can't.
Why not?
They live in Canada.
Ah. You gotta love the, oh, I have Canadian friends excuse.
Yeah. They live in British Columbia.
Do they not have a passport? Can they not come hang out for a day? Show them around the studio?
They were just in town this past weekend, and you missed them.
What about FaceTime? The Canadians have iPhones.
So they live in part of British Columbia that's kind of like outside.
Oh, you mean like Burnaby?
Yeah.
Oh, funny how I just, you know, thought of a place in Canada and that's exactly where they are.
Small world, they say.
Man.
Small world.
It's incredible.
She just pushed that button. Push the button. They call me Detective Rance, not you. You don't have to do an interrogation.
No one calls you that.
1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. See, and the 253, we just got a text. Detective Rance, great show this afternoon. See? It's John from, what was the name of this one?
John Coquet?
From
Burnaby?
Yeah.
Wow, Burnaby is the 253 because I grew up
He moved.
Oh.
He was originally from Washington.
And he's still using the
the
South King County area code and Pierce County area code.
Hmm. He's from Tumwater.
Gotcha.
Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. Two young black girls asked Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau why he decided to put on blackface. They did it during an interview on a Facebook show called New Mom Who Dis. Now, it's funny because I wasn't quite sure whether or not this was a joke bit, if this was a satirical thing that kind of caught Justin Trudeau off guard. This, of course, happening after, at this point, what, 2 or 3 weeks worth of really bad press when video surfaced of the wokest of woke politicians being seen in blackface. Not once, but many times. In fact, he can't even tell you how many other videos are out there. And so it started off, again, in a way that I thought was kind of just jokey and cute.
You came here with a full team. I also brought backup. Come in.
It's adorable.
Hi, come in, take a seat. Hi, everybody.
Hi!
I want you to ask Mr. Prime Minister anything you want, and he has to answer honestly, because what kind of a monster lies to a child?
There you go.
So that sounds right. Like a joke.
Grace.
Yeah.
Do you live in a rancher?
I live in a big house that is the house that the Prime Minister gets to live in. So, yes, it would probably qualify as a match.
Okay.
How much did it cost?
It is actually owned by the Government of Canada and by all Canadians.
He gets to live there for free.
Okay, so at this point, it kind of sounds like it's supposed to be a cute, jokey type of interview. That you're not going to expect to get any deep dive into some serious topics until they ask the two twins to speak.
Okay, I don't know if you noticed, we have twins.
Twins here, very exciting.
Soleil and Solara, do you want to stand up and ask a question?
Oh, yes, they do.
What did you paint your face brown?
Oh.
Ooh. It was something I shouldn't have done, because it hurt people.
Just real quick, it didn't hurt people. People are pretending to be hurt because they don't like it, they're offended by it. No one's actually hurt by it. But continue, Mr. Prime Minister.
It's not something that you should do.
Why'd you do it? Why'd you, if it's not something you're supposed to do, why'd you do it?
That is something that I learned. I didn't know it back then, but I know it now. And I'm sorry I hurt people.
So, that's probably all you're expecting to get out of these girls, yeah? I mean, you throw in that one question, some producer probably told them to do it because this is clearly not on their mind, and then you kind of move on. Because at that point, he's like, phew, okay, I'm not going to get pressed on this.
Yeah, no, he avoided it enough as it was.
They had a follow-up.
But did you paint your nose and your hands brown?
Okay. Did you paint your nose and your hands brown? She went all in. She gave the toughest follow-up question than anyone in the sycophantic media that loves Justin Trudeau. Let's hear him squirm his way out of this. So awkward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
And it was the wrong thing to do. And I had a good conversation with my kids around taking responsibility for mistakes and making sure that we're always sticking up for each other.
But you didn't take responsibility. You kind of dismiss all the questions and don't really answer them directly. You move around, but please finish your thought. I like that you're so awkward and you're sweating right now.
And not teasing each other and being respectful towards each other.
It wasn't very respectful of you when you decided to do that. Why?
I'm sorry that I hurt you as well.
You say sorry funny. You say sorry. It's sorry. Oh, no, we're in Canada. Sorry.
I'm sorry that I hurt kids who get face teasing and discrimination because
of you. We're teased now because of you. Will you step down? Where are you going? Ma'am, what? Madam host, why is he walking out of the studio?
Because of the color of their skin. That's just not right in this country or anywhere around the world. We all have to work together to make sure that it doesn't happen. Okay?
That's not acceptable of an answer.
Thanks, guys.
Don't silence me. I wasn't done. I still had questions.
That was tough. So awkward. And by the way, are they happy with Jesse Cruikshank? She's the host of this? Because again, I've never heard of this show. It's a Facebook show, so of course I haven't actually heard of it. And it's called New Mom Who Dis. Why in the world would I actually watch something like that? Why would you go on that show?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering. Like, who would do that to themselves?
I'm assuming it's a popular parenting mommy blogger type of show that people watch on Facebook, and he's like, okay, you know what? I need to reach a mother demographic, parents and whatnot. This is what's the worst that can happen? We're gonna get a few adorable kids around me, and we'll talk about some issues that will connect with kids and parents, and then I'll wander out of this thing. And oh my God, he looks so uncomfortable too.
Yeah,
this was not a planned bit that he was aware of. It's clearly it was planned. They were sabotaging them.
Yeah, he didn't look like he wanted to be there, and he didn't look like he knew. He didn't have an answer prepared, like, you know, most of these other briefings that he's had where he has all of his answers prepared. He didn't have it ready to go.
Hey, Prime Minister.
Yeah?
You botched the answers there.
God, you're a tough crowd.
Yeah, well, you're a bad PM. Now get out of my classroom.
I'd be so much better at hosting these shows. I'm just throwing that out there. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text message on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. Also, give me a follow. Twitter.com/JasonRants.